Are you tired of being told what to think and how to act? Well, you are not alone. In case you haven't realized it, you have an internal GPS. It knows all you need to know about how to live your life. So it's about time you stopped letting the media and the government tell you what is true for you. In fact, it is exactly that time. It's time to think for yourself. And here to make sure you're doing just that is your host, mediator, author, and lawyer, Carol Gold.
Hi, it's Sunday, March 10th. I'm Carol Gold, and welcome to Think for Yourself. Yes, I've been gone for a while. Life gets in the way sometimes. I had a small accident, and I'm doing great now, so I'm back. Sorry for those episodes that just weren't here when you came to get them, but I'm back now, and I'm going to give it my all. This past week, President Biden delivered the State of the Union address, and I realize that we're a few days past it, but there are some things that he said or didn't say that I think are worth mentioning even a few days out. First of all, I'd like to give you my impression of the speech, because not everybody watched it, not even close. I mean, we have 350 million people in this country, and I think 20 or 23 million watched the State of the Union. Not that that isn't a lot of people, but the odds are that you did not see it. I did, because I always want my own firsthand impression. I don't want to get it through, you know, a 15-second news blip or whatever. I had an overall feeling. I know that if you're a Democrat and if you are pro-Biden and if you intend to vote for him in 2024, you probably had some really good takeaways from the speech itself, both in its delivery and its content. But watching it not as a Democrat, watching it as an independent, I found his demeanor and his delivery to be divisive, to be angry, and most importantly, to be untrue in many places, factually incorrect and untrue. Because words matter, the words he chose to use for certain things or the description he chose to give them matter. And I want to talk about a couple of them. The first one is that, and I go to these things because they were top and center on his list in terms of his delivery during the speech. He ignored the word invasion when referring to the immigration problem. And he didn't refer to it very much, but he deliberately did not use the word invasion. Now, if you're semi-conscious, you know that that's exactly what we're living through. We're living through an invasion of mostly military-age men. Yes, there are women and children coming across the border, but they pale in comparison to the number of military-age men coming from not only countries in South America, but coming from countries all over the world, many of them our adversaries. Specifically China, specifically some radical Muslim populations out of the Middle East. He simply would not use the word invasion, but he did use the word insurrection, which fascinates me because I'm an attorney and facts matter. As I said, words matter generally, but to me, facts matter. The word insurrection is an interesting word that he used that the media, mainstream media, continues to use. And that anyone opposed to Donald Trump's re-election uses. But the fact is that neither in the January 6th report, which was compiled by purely Democrats, with three pro-left-leaning Republicans, or as people call them, rhinos, on the committee, that entire January 6th report never used the word insurrection, and it didn't use it because it knows that it could not. Those who were on the committee know they can't use the word insurrection in the document itself. They can use it when they talk about it on the news. They can use it when they accuse Trump and his supporters of having committed it. But they know they can't use it legally because there was no insurrection. By definition, there was no insurrection, and they know they can't prove a charge of insurrection. And the reason they know they can't prove a charge of insurrection, or at least the evidence that they can't prove it, is that no one has been charged with insurrection. Not Donald Trump, not one single January 6th defendant has been charged with insurrection. Parading, yes. Illegally going onto government grounds, yes. and some other charges, but not insurrection. There's a reason for that. So words matter. So does the respect due people who've either suffered a trauma or suffered a tragedy, particularly from our elected officials and most particularly from the President of the United States. So when Biden was talking about crime, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who many people dislike, who is a very right-leaning, right-wing, if you will, Republican, avid Trump supporter, who wore a Trump hat, a MAGA hat, to the State of the Union, right or wrong, and I say right or wrong because the State of the Union isn't supposed to be a political place. It's supposed to be a place where politics are put aside for the moment. It's not a campaign event, although I would argue that Biden's speech was in fact a campaign speech and one of the worst State of the Union speeches by definition ever given by a U.S. president. But putting that aside, she wore the MAGA hat and she called out loud, interrupting him while he was discussing crime, the name of Laken Riley. And she yelled, Marjorie Taylor Greene, say her name, say her name. She said, say her name, because if you don't know, Laken Riley was murdered. She was a 22-year-old student at Augusta University in Georgia, and she was killed on February 22nd, jogging near the University of Georgia campus. Her murderer, Jose Antonio Ibarra, is a 26-year-old Venezuelan citizen who entered the United States illegally in 2022. He brutally murdered her. He brutally murdered her to the extent that her skull was almost unrecognizable. And when President Biden was talking about crime, Marjorie Taylor Greene yelled out, say her name, because Laken Riley's mother had created a hashtag, say her name, meaning remember her. She was a nursing student. She was a beloved daughter, a beloved friend. She was apparently a very lovely young woman, brutally murdered while she was jogging. And so Marjorie Taylor Greene yelled out, say her name. And ready for that, Biden held up, I guess, like a token or a coin that I guess was some sort of commemorative. And he said, Laken Riley was murdered by an illegal. And then he mumbled some other stuff about how many thousands have been murdered by illegals. I don't even know what the point of the subsequent sentence was, but suffice it to say, he didn't say her name right. He called her Laken Riley. Even though he was prepared for that interruption, prepared for heckling, and prepped to have the coin, the commemorative thing with him, and say her name, he called her Laken Riley. Her name was Laken Riley. So yes, respect and the use of someone's name in a tragic situation is the very least you can do. He seemed unable to do that. But more importantly, or maybe as importantly, I don't want to prioritize one over the other because they're both pretty important. Biden called Jose Antonio Ibarra an illegal. He said Laken Riley was murdered by an illegal. Well, after the State of the Union, the next day he was interviewed, I think on NBC, might have been CBS, I'm not sure, and asked if he regretted using the word illegal. And he said that he did, that he did. These are undocumented people. They're not illegal. Well, guess what? Jose Antonio Ibarra entered the United States illegally in 2022. He crossed the border illegally in 2022. So isn't that accurate? Isn't it accurate to call him an illegal? It may not be politically correct, and it may not be woke, but it sure as hell is true and accurate. Why does the president apologize for calling him an illegal, which is exactly what he was? He apologized because he wants votes. He apologized because he is pandering to the left. He's apologizing because he wants all of those people who think all of the illegals who have entered our country, 10 million of them approximately, give or take, should be treated the same way citizens are treated. And it's absolutely absurd because words matter. And so does reality. And speaking of reality And speaking of mothers who've lost children, I listened to another mother this week. Her last name is Martin. Her son was Ryan Matthew Martin. Ryan Matthew Martin was 24 years old. He was an incredibly responsible young man. He had been working since the age of 14. He was a bodybuilder. He owned his own home at age 24, a remarkable feat in and of itself in today's economy. His girlfriend was about to move in with him, and he made a mistake. He did, for the first time in his life, one line of cocaine. When his girlfriend arrived home, she found him dead on the sofa. There was so little cocaine in Ryan Martin's bloodstream that the toxicology report could barely register the cocaine. What he died of was fentanyl and horse tranquilizer. Now, that's happening because of the southern border. That's happening because of China's complicity in facilitating the manufacture, the transportation, and the illegal entry of fentanyl across our southern border. And if you have any doubt about that fact, try reading Peter Schweitzer's book that came out this past week, or 2 weeks ago, called Blood Money. I am reading it, and it is startling, and it is terrifying, and it is true. Over 1,000 footnotes to this book. There are no anonymous sources. You will understand why we're told that Russia is our greatest enemy, when in fact China is. But I want to go back to Ryan Matthew Martin and his death. Listening to his mother was absolutely heart-wrenching. But when I thought about it, there are 100,000 of her across the country, because that's how many people are dying every year of this illegal entry of this deadly drug coming across our southern border because it's open. 100,000. Most of them are between the ages of 20 and 40, which means they're somebody's child. Because even if you're 40, your parent is still alive, and to them, you are a child. So I started to think, you know, we all probably know someone, or we know someone who knows someone who has lost someone to this lacing of drugs, legal drugs, and not fatal drugs, with the fatal drug fentanyl, so that a one-time usage can cause death. We all either know someone or know someone who knows someone. And I say that because if you think about it, 100,000 deaths a year in this country from fentanyl. If you just look at the 48 contiguous states and leave out, obviously, Alaska and Hawaii, and you divide 100,000 by 48, you get 2,083 per state. 2,083 people are dying a year per state of fentanyl. But we don't really talk about the source of the problem. The source of the problem is the same way that Laken Riley's murderer got into this country. It's the illegal entry across an open southern border, which allows illegal people to enter this country, illegal people who want to harm this country and its citizens, illegal people who are bringing with them illegal drugs, who are part of human trafficking, who are part of a slave population that is being brought into this country and then captured into slavery within this country, both sex trafficking and illegal labor. It's happening because the border is open. This isn't rocket science. I've said this before. You have a door on your house because you don't want just anybody walking across that threshold and eating in your kitchen. There's a reason why wealthy people in this country have walls and fences around their homes. There's a reason why political people who have public appearances have security guards. They are protecting themselves and their property. But as for the rest of us, we should be exposed to 10 million illegals coming into this country annually who intend, many of them, to do harm. And even if they don't, even if they don't, even if they're not even asylum seekers, or even if they are, even if they are escaping horrible conditions in the countries from which they are fleeing, you come in, but you come in legally. Because when you come in illegally, it makes you an illegal, President Biden. It makes you an illegal. You were right the first time when you spoke. You were cowardly when you regretted having used the correct word. He also, in his speech, equated October 7th and the massacre and the slaughter and the savagery that happened to innocent Israelis, non-combatants, on that day, on a Jewish holiday, a holiday of joy and celebration. He equated that with the plight of the Palestinians. And he cautioned Israel in its response. He promoted a two-state solution. And he made the statement for the first time that I was aware of that we are now about to use taxpayer dollars to set up an aid port outside of Gaza to be able to bring food and humanitarian aid into these poor people, these poor Gazans who are being trapped in southern Gaza because Israel is busy cleaning out the roaches of terrorists that have occupied that strip of land since at least, as the governing body, 2004. We're going to use taxpayer dollars to send humanitarian aid. I don't know if you saw it, but there is a Palestinian in Gaza in a video on X, and he is holding up a bag of humanitarian aid from the United States, and he is saying in translation, because he's speaking in Arabic, in translation, he is saying, and he's showing you, he's walking over to a dumpster, and he's throwing the bag of humanitarian aid that our tax dollars are paying for into the dumpster, saying he wouldn't take any food from us, from the Americans. But we're about to use taxpayer dollars to set up an offshore port, a platform off of the Gaza Strip, so that we can send humanitarian aid into both people who don't want it and Hamas, who will steal it from the citizens and use it for themselves, in order to keep the major population poor, hungry, and looking like the Israelis are the cause of their problem, when in fact it's Hamas. You know, tonight at sundown, I believe, starts the Muslim holiday of Ramadan. It is a month of fasting, prayers, reflection, and I guess introspection, which may be the same thing. But imams across the Arabic world, the Muslim world rather, and leaders of Hamas and Hezbollah have called during Ramadan for increased violence against Israel and the West during this holy month. And when I heard that, I thought about the Jewish holiday of Purim. Purim falls this year on March 24th, sort of smack in the middle of Ramadan. And what is read during the book of Purim is the book of Esther. So whether you're a Christian or you're a Jew, you probably know the book of Esther. But let me summarize. In Persia, there was a king called Ahasuerus, and he had a sort of a second-in-command or an aide, the highest-ranking person in his court named Haman. And Haman hated the Jews of Persia. He particularly hated Mordecai, who was an observant Jew, and Mordecai had a daughter named Esther. When the king Ahasuerus asked his wife, or directed his wife, to dance erotically, and I think nakedly, if I'm not mistaken, in front of his court, she refused. And so he had her killed, and he then decided that he was going to take as his wife the most beautiful woman in his kingdom. That turned out to be someone named Esther, only Esther was a Jew, and the king didn't know it. So he brought Esther in as his wife. He had many, but she was number one. And he did not know that he had brought in a Jew to be his wife. Well, long story short, Haman decided that he wanted to do away with Mordecai. He tried to frame Mordecai by telling Ahasuerus that Mordecai was plotting to kill the king. Part of Haman's plan was a day in which all the Jews in the kingdom were allowed to be slaughtered by the non-Jews. That's what was going to happen. And so the king allowed Mordecai to build a gallows on which Haman was going to hang Mordecai. So Mordecai went to Esther and he said, "You have to go into the king and you have to tell him the truth of what's going on." But Esther said, "I can't do that. If I go in and ask the king to save the Jews, he's going to know the truth and that I'm a Jew and he's going to kill me. I can't do it." And Mordecai said, "If you think that you can continue, in essence, to live hidden behind the truth, God will figure out another way to save the Jews, and you won't be saved." So Esther thought about it. She prayed and fasted for 3 days, and then she went into the king. And she told Ahasuerus the truth of everything. And he believed her. And the end of the story is that on the day that all of the Jews were supposed to be killed in the kingdom, Haman was hung on the gallows that he had built for Mordecai. His deception wound up being the impetus for his own death. So I would say this to those who seek to do renewed and once again horrific violence against the Jews during Ramadan: read the book of Esther. And to those of us who are just watching all of this unfold, I would say what Mordecai said to Esther, which is, if you think that knowing right from wrong and good from evil, you can afford to be silent about what's happening in the world around us, whether it's the southern border, whether it's the atrocity that happened on October 7th in Israel and Israel's rightful response to attempt to maintain its existence, whether it's the lies and deception around the war in Ukraine, whether it's the silence against the horror that China is inflicting upon us through, in essence, the equivalent of the opium wars that happened in China when Britain used opium to kill off and to enslave the Chinese population. The Chinese remember, and they're doing it now here. Whether it's any of those, whether it's drag queen story hours in your kid's library, whether it's any of those, if, like Esther, you think that by keeping silent and not standing for what is right and what is good, that somehow those who deserve to be punished or those who deserve to be defeated will somehow be punished or defeated, and you will be able to remain outside the fray and somehow survive, I caution you. This is a moment of choice for all of us. We are living in a moment of choice. This is the battle of our generation, of the time in which we live. It's good against evil. And in such a battle, you cannot be silent. Wherever you see evil, you have to call it out for what it is. You cannot afford to be politically correct because you will be hung on the gallows that you think is being built for someone else. Part of me wants to apologize for being gone for 3 weeks and coming back and ending with what is such a somber message. But somber times call sometimes for somber messages, because that is to call out exactly what's happening. And I refuse to be silent in a time when I have a microphone, a voice, and the gift of critical thought and the faith of someone who knows that God is watching and my choices matter. Thanks for listening. I'm Carol Gold. I'll be back here again next Sunday. And until I am, by all means, think for yourself.
Carol thanks you for spending your valuable time with her. It is her mission to empower you to remember how smart and capable you are. Be sure to check out Carol's website, carolgold.com. That's Carol with an E. carolgold.com. Please leave a review and subscribe here so you'll be alerted to Carol's next podcast. Until then, above all else, remember, it's time to think for yourself.